This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 201 for Wednesday, July 20th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and sometimes websites. Joining me tonight, Mr. Lou Page of Zombies Ate My Podcast. Welcome, sir.
Howdy.
How are things with you? It's been on a couple weeks, I think. No.
No, I was on last week. I was on last week. But we didn't get to talk about my show because it wasn't appropriate for children.
Oh, right, because Sydney was on.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I just got a comment pre-show saying, "Hey, Joel, is the Citadel Cafe still posting on iTunes? I haven't seen it in a while." And you're right, because I've been so busy that I have not even yet posted episode 199. Which is why I was confused as to when Lou's on, because the episode that I was editing right before this show was me and Hammond. And in my brain, I was thinking that was last week. I was like, no, that was 2 weeks ago. So now I'm going to be editing 201 after that, and I'll be posting all of them very, very soon. So I apologize for the delay, people. If you're here live, then you haven't missed a beat. But if you are catching up, then I'm sorry. My sister is probably very mad at me because she listens on the way to work in the morning. And she's probably been missing a show.
And I haven't noticed because I don't listen to the ones I'm on. And I've been on, I was on last week, so I didn't notice it didn't get updated.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't listen to them either. I mean, every once in a while, like every 10 or so episodes, I'll do like a gut check and I'll, you know, just decide to listen in for audio checks. Or if I know we've had issues or if I had a hard time getting the stream sorted, then I'll listen to make sure that everything sounds okay. But I mean, like I listen to chunks of it when I edit it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what's going to happen. I'm just saying, as a listener, I don't listen to the ones I'm on because
no.
It's regurgitating stuff I already know.
Yeah, no, and I had a really fun experience listening to Comics Coast to Coast on a week when I wasn't there,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool because once upon a time I was a fan of the show and I wasn't on it and I used to listen to those guys all the time. So being able to listen to Brian and Matt talk about Voltron for an episode was really cool.
Yeah, I can say on ZAMP, I don't think there is a single episode where I'm not on. There's been weeks where I can't make it, and they've decided to cancel and not do the show without me. So I can't say I've ever listened without me.
One cannot proceed without the busy zombie lord.
At least I think that's what Bob said was the goal. Was no. If Lou's not here, we can't do the show.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to vote that we just dive right into what we want to talk about this week because I've been so busy that there's really nothing new to report, but I have had a time to watch a few things. But I remember that on episode 200, we had a pint-sized guest, and you had a show that you wanted to talk about, but you couldn't get to it.
Yes.
Because it was maybe not appropriate for children.
Yeah, not really appropriate for children.
Yeah, so what is it that you wanted to share?
Are you familiar with The Family Channel? Do you guys get that up in Canada?
Yes.
Okay, well, ABC and Disney own that, and they've just changed its name. It's being called Freeform now, and it's the same channel that's going to get Cloak and Dagger as a Marvel show next season.
So Cloak and Dagger is going to be on Freeform?
Freeform.
Huh.
And I don't want to say it's not family-oriented, but a lot of the shows they're running now are not family-oriented. And the show I wanted to mention is a show called Dead of Summer. I had no idea what this was. I was in the mall with my wife, and there was a sign for it in the mall. They're advertising in malls for this show. And it showed a bunch of people sitting on a dock and looked like zombie hands coming up out of the water. So I went, ooh, it's a zombie show. It's not a zombie show. But it is a horror show. So that was kind of what drew me to this. It's done by the guys who did Lost, or a bunch of them are former writers for Lost or producers from Lost. And the idea is it takes place in 1989, and it's in like the Midwest somewhere at a lake, and it's a camp that's been closed for the last 4 or 5 years, and because of some tragedy that happened, and weird things have happened in the woods. Like there's, it begins with a footage. It begins with a clip that says it's from 1870 or something like that. And it's this, it's, do you know who Tony Todd is? He was the Candyman in the Candyman movies.
I'd probably know him to see him.
You'd know him if you saw him.
Was he in Smallville too?
I think he was.
Yeah. Okay.
He's he's the voice of, in The Flash, he was the voice of Zoom.
Yes. I know who that is.
Yeah. And he's in this, and it starts with 1870 or 1860 or something like that. And he's in an abandoned church playing a piano, and everybody's gone. And a bunch of guys with guns are approaching this church, and they come in, and they grab him, and they drag him out of the church. And then it cuts to the lake next to the church, and it just shows, like, dozens of bodies floating in the lake. And they never explain to you why or what's going on.
Hmm.
And then next thing you know, it cuts to 1989, and it's a bunch of kids getting on a bus going to camp to be counselors. And it's weird things start happening at the camp. Somebody ends up dead, and you don't know why they're dead. And each one of the kids seems to have a weird story or some tie to the camp. And they've only aired 3 episodes, and I've only seen the first 2 so far. But so far, it's really interesting. Each episode focuses on a different kid, so you get a different story or backstory for each kid so far.
It sounds like a lot like Lost.
Yeah, it's a lot like Lost, but in a different sort of way. Like, there's something going on with the camp, and the woman who was in Lost, the blonde that was the one of the doctors on the island.
No, I only saw the first season.
Okay. She is she's the one that owns the camp. And like, she's digging something up in the woods and you don't know what it is. One of the kids sees it, and like, there's all this weird twist. There's a group of devil worshippers that are hanging out in the woods. It's a weird, a really weird show, but it's all tied together into this thing where you're like, why are they all there and what is going on? And it's held my interest. So it's definitely something, and it's got a pretty high production value. So it gave me some hope that Cloak and Dagger by Marvel isn't going to be just some cheap show. They do a scene where there is a bad fire special effect, but you can tell it's because the fire effect needed to be there in a building that they weren't ready to burn down yet. But then they do burn the real building down. And you're like, oh, okay, I get why they didn't do that. Mm. They needed to use a digital effect. But it's not awful. But if you pay really close attention, you can tell the fire's not real. But
yeah, I don't mind stuff like that if it's serves its purpose. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of intrigue. It sounds a little formulaic as far as, you know, what I remember about Lost, but I didn't watch Lost past season 1, so I can't judge. But the Dead of Summer one, it reminds me, just your description, and all I have seen is just some marketing stuff online and an email to me and on Netflix in general. I think it's called Stranger Things.
Yes, that's the new Netflix show.
So, and there's kids on the poster for it. Yeah. So I'm wondering if it's the same sort of ilk.
Stranger Things is supposed to be kind of like a spooky Twin Peaksy kind of thing, but with like an E.T. vibe.
Okay. See, I liked, what was that one that Abrams directed that was very E.T. like?
It's Super 8.
Super 8, right.
Yeah, that's what Stranger Things is supposed to be, kind of in that vein.
Oh, cool.
A kid goes missing, I think, is the basic idea. He sees something, and there's a military base near the town, and they think that there's aliens, and a bunch of his friends are looking for him. And in the meantime, Winona Ryder, who's his mother, is looking for him, and she's trying to get the kids to help her or something, and the sheriff is somehow involved. I've only seen a couple of minutes of it. I haven't watched an episode yet, but it definitely looks interesting.
Netflix has got my, you know, at least my first episode. You know, like I'll watch anything that they do at least once. Sometimes I'll give it more than that because the track record is usually 3 to 4 episodes to kind of really pick things up. I'm having a lot of trouble with Bloodline season two.
I had a hard time with season one.
I loved season one. It was slow to get going, but then by the end of season one, I was on the edge of my seat. But in season two, it's just like, okay, well, where do we go? What do we do? And it feels like we're doing more of the same. And I'm just waiting for someone to do something stupid. And I've only watched one episode. I will give it more. But I really was not impressed by the first episode of season two as much as I was impressed by the first episode of season one. Because season one grabs you, and then it's a slow burn to really pick up again.
Yeah.
Season two, there was no grab. So, but I'm definitely interested in Stranger Things. Netflix production value is always pretty high. I really enjoyed season one and maybe season two of Hemlock Grove.
Yep.
Season one was awesome. Season one was just freaky and weird, and you had questions, and they didn't explain anything, and it was good.
I finished season two of that, and it wasn't awful, but it wasn't great either. It was just okay.
Yeah.
I started season three, and I got like two episodes in and was like, nope, I'm done.
Oh, I powered through like six episodes of season three, and I bailed. Like, I could not get back into it. It just became dumb. I really am not a fan of Skarsgård, the main actor. He's just not my cup of tea.
Nope. Do you know what the best thing on television is, though, right now?
Hmm.
It's Preacher.
Nice. It's all going to be a very comic central episode.
Yeah.
So I know Preacher is a comic book, and Preacher is the character that was in Arrow?
No.
No, that's...
That is Constantine.
Constantine. Okay, so that was close.
I believe the guys that wrote Preacher used to write Constantine as well.
So is Preacher a bad guy?
He's sort of a gray area hero.
So he's in the lines of, like, Punisher.
Yeah. The idea in the and the show is very different from the comic, and it would have to be. Preacher is a great comic book, but you have to read it knowing that it took place in the 90s.
Right.
Like, there's lots of 90s pop culture references, like Kurt Cobain and stuff. And if you're not, like... didn't grow up in the 90s, it might be hard for you to read.
So is Preacher, like... in, out, and done as far as comics are concerned?
Yes. It's like, I think it's 40 issues.
Oh, wow.
And it was over.
Wow,
and
that's short.
It's like, it was like, they ran for like 4 years and then it was done. I have all the trades for it. I'm a huge fan, so I've been really excited for this show.
Hmm.
And the show is not a scene-for-scene remake of the comic. It is a faithful tone of the comic.
Nice.
Every character is exactly the way they were portrayed in the comic, but it takes place now, not then. Not in the 90s.
Yeah, well, that's good. Because, like, throwing back to the 60s or the 70s, interesting. Throwing back to the 90s, no one cares.
Yeah, and the thing is the idea is Jesse Custer is a preacher in a small town in Texas. And his father used to be a preacher. But Jesse has a checkered past. He may, in fact, be a criminal, and you don't really know. And it cuts to him giving sermons, and he's kind of not into it. He's trying to do his job to change the people in the town, and a thing shows up from outer space, and you don't know what it is, and it starts possessing ministers. And people in the church either die or the minister dies. And the show does this very subtle thing because it's Jesse talking with his parishioners, thinking he might give up the cloth. He can't do this right now. And then he's in a bar and just out of the corner of your ear, like you barely hear it. If you're not paying attention, you totally would miss it. It talks about how Tom Cruise was giving a speech to Scientologists and his head blew up and nobody knows why. And it's just this throwaway piece of dialogue that, like, if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't get. And then, like, they make a reference to it again later on in another background scene. Like, there's reoccurring things like that throughout the show.
Hmm.
Like, every couple of episodes where they make a reference to something that was just subtly, like, on a newspaper clipping in the back of like, something they walk pan by. And you'll see a headline that just, next thing you know, someone's talking about that headline three episodes later. It's really subtly done. But anyway, the being that's possessing people and trying to take over ends up in Jesse. And he doesn't realize it. It happens while he's sleeping. And what ends up happening is he has what they call the word of God. And he can command people to do whatever he wants, and they do it.
So very similar to the guy from Jessica Jones.
Yes. But he doesn't know how to use it. And he does. He thinks that God has given him the word.
Right.
And he hasn't. He finds out that it's not God, but it is something God-like. And angels show up and want it back. And in the meantime, he's trying to use it to help make the bad people in his church do the right thing. And it starts to change. And along the way, he meets this guy in a bar. They end up in a bar fight with a bunch of people. And they end up both getting arrested. And the guy is like, oh, yeah. I need a place to stay. Can I crash with you? And he's like, sure. So this guy shows up, and his name's Cassidy. And Cassidy begins to help him fix up the church. And what he tells Jesse is he's a vampire. And Jesse laughs and thinks, ha, yeah, right, you're a vampire. No, he's a vampire.
Nice.
And you don't realize he's a vampire. Well, you as a viewer realize he's a vampire right from the beginning. He's on an airplane, and a bunch of people on the airplane, he's like flying privately, and he's like the stewardess on the plane, and all the passengers are vampire hunters trying to kill him.
Jeez. It's an intense show.
Yes. Like, it's very intense. And it'll make you laugh one minute, it'll make you think the next minute, and then it'll be very drama heavy the next minute. Like, it's all over the place, but in a good way.
Yeah. Dominic Cooper is a good actor.
Yes, he is.
I've seen him in a bunch of other stuff. Who's this? I looked up the comics, and the Google search for the comics also shows the characters as they're appearing in the television show.
Yes.
Who's the guy with the puckered up face?
That is his name. His name is Assface.
Oh, that's what I was... I feared that was where they were going with that. We don't need to go any details.
His story is actually really important in the comic, and it's really important in the show. He's somebody who did something bad, and now he has to pay for it.
Yeah.
And Jesse is trying to help him redeem himself.
Interesting. I want to check this out, so don't spoil anything. But
Jesse's
yeah.
trying to help him redeem himself. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But he's an interesting character, and he's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable when you look at it.
Yeah.
And they do absolutely. A really good job with his makeup.
Yeah. Well, and the images in the comic are really disturbing.
The show is just as bad.
Okay. Well, good to know. I've been in the mood for something creepy, so I'll have to check this out.
It's one of those things that once you start, you won't be able to stop.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but so Preacher was a comic under what label?
It was under Vertigo.
Vertigo. Okay. So is there not a comic villain named Preacher? Like, is Preacher not a comic villain from another?
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware
of. From like a Marvel or a DC?
There might be a Marvel villain that's called the Preacher.
Maybe in Spawn. I don't know. I'm getting who's the guy that is always up against Deadpool.
Deadpool has several villains, but there's no Preacher.
No Preacher. What's the name of the main guy?
He usually ends up fighting Hydra or some X-Men villain that wants him dead.
I thought they leaked out something on Deadpool, and then the next movie there was going to be this other character.
Cable is going to be
in it. Cable, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I feel like Preacher comic. I thought there was. Maybe I'm thinking about Image Comics.
You might be.
Because I'm just remembering something from my past.
Technically, Preacher is DC, but he doesn't take place in the DC universe.
Technically, the Preacher that you're talking about.
Yes. Technically, okay. He's a DC comic because they own Vertigo.
Right, okay.
But
not part of the canon, yeah.
Right. This was one of those that was done in Europe under the Vertigo title kind of thing.
Wow. I really, I'm curious to read the comics, too. They look really...
It's a really intense show, and it's one of those things that was really controversial in the 90s because it's borderline. It's very full of atheistic ideas, but then in some ways you read it and there'll be something religious in it, and you can see where the takeaway is that not that religion is necessarily a bad thing, but you can't always take it so seriously, kind of thing. So it's all over the place, but it's an interesting story, and it's been picked up for a second season already. It's AMC. It's on AMC. So they've been saying that its numbers are very high compared to what they were expecting. So.
Yeah, I'm getting this vision of somebody with like skull face paint and lots of bullets when I hear the name Preacher, and I'm sure I'm thinking about somebody else.
You're thinking of somebody else, but I don't think he's called the Preacher.
No, I think you're right. I think he would be a chapel, maybe?
I think there is a guy called the Chapel.
Chapel.
Or the Chaplain or something like that.
Comic characters. I feel like that's who I'm thinking of. And he is... And is he Image?
I think he is an Image villain.
Yeah, he's a Spawn bad guy.
Yep.
That's probably what I'm thinking of. Probably what I'm thinking of. Okay, cool. It's funny how the things stick in your brain, but then they get... They're close, but they're not quite right.
Yep.
Oh, interesting. So as keeping with our comic talk, I made good on my promise to watch the Ultimate Edition, I'll use that term loosely, of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. It is long. The theatrical release was, 2 hours and 20 or more, and this is a full 3 hours of Batman v Superman. And I was speaking with Alistair earlier, and he had mentioned that he had seen it, but he didn't necessarily pick up on the differences right away.
Yeah.
So it made me even more curious to think, all right, well, if it's that seamless, then, you know, maybe what they've done is just really trimmed out a lot of little bits off of a number of scenes.
It's supposedly a full 30 minutes longer.
Yeah, it's a full 30 minutes longer, and there are longer cuts. Like, there are some scenes where they've definitely extended in things that I don't remember seeing. Now, I've managed to watch it twice in the last week, basically because the first time I was really focused on what was new. Like, I was really being jarred by what was new. And then the second time through, I was watching it a little bit more closely, just as its own movie.
Yeah.
And plus, I've just been jonesing for something Superman, Batman, and, you know, like, I can fast forward through some of the, you know, the second time through, I fast forwarded through some of the slower bits. And plus, at home, I can watch it in half an hour chunks.
Yeah,
you sit down, you know, eating breakfast and whatever, and you can kind of watch it. And if you've seen it once before, then it's not like you're ruining the experience, sort of thing. When you can watch it for half an hour here, an hour there, so it doesn't change my opinion of the movie as far as the subjective treatment of my favorite comic heroes. I don't like the way that they handled Superman. I don't like the fact that he dies. It's not a very good superhero movie because they're not in it very much.
No,
they're really only in it for like the last 40 minutes, and even then, you're pushing it. So, the one thing, I guess I should start with the positive. What it does illustrate a lot better is how Lex Luthor is weaving the plot throughout the entire thing, like from point one. Now, having seen the movie in theaters, I know that that's the mastermind behind everything. So I mean, spoilers, I guess, but
yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, I knew that going in, but then you think, what I remember from the theatrical release, and you can probably attest to this too, it was not clear.
Yeah. I was never sure what his goal was or why he did the things he did.
Yeah. It was not clear. And it was told in a way that you didn't really, it's not like you clued in because they gave you all the smash you over the head with the things as it goes down. Like, whenever Luther's on the screen, there's this obnoxious music that's just like, he's the bad guy, duh, you know?
Yeah.
But what didn't make sense when you're watching the film is that the characters are not reacting in any way, shape, or form that makes sense to then lead to the end where Luther does his big reveal that he's the bad guy of it all. The extended edition really lines up a lot more. And so you'll see a few things happen, and then you'll realize that, you know, you get the extended version, and he's like, oh, so that's the setup. And oh, because Lois Lane was in that scene 5 minutes ahead of time that I didn't know about, that's makes way more sense as to why she's in the middle of the desert. And like, there's a few other things that kind of like really, as opposed to the movie saying, this is happening, accept it because we're telling you this is happening. It changes and adds a little bit more character driven momentum right to stuff, which is good because the film needed it. And I'm sure that Snyder as a director, it probably hurt cutting this 30 minutes out.
I can imagine. Because it did feel like there was something missing.
It went from a technically poorly directed movie in theaters to something that it's still not my favorite film, but it's at least technically you can follow the story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you haven't seen Batman v Superman, do yourself a favor, dear listener, and skip the theatrical. Watch the Ultimate Edition. And, I mean, judge how you want. There's still some things in it that you're probably, you know, well, you might like it, but I mean, I didn't. But at least it's a better tactical story. There's still some major cuts that I was hoping they were going to fix that they didn't. There's a really, I can't remember who it was. I think it might've been Phil actually in the chat room. There's a point where Perry White is looking for Clark and he's like, what the hell does he do? Click his heels, go back to Kansas.
Yeah.
So technically you would think that they're leading into the next scene of Clark in Kansas with his mom. Nope.
No,
it's the ship. They cut to the ship. Like it just, so there's all this, there's this weird stuff that they do that just doesn't flow very well.
Yeah.
The Batman body count is still way higher than it needs to be. There's no real redemption there. The Batman v Superman fight at the end, there is still so much silence. Like there's a point where like they're trying to convince me that Clark is so in love with Lois that he's going to propose to her.
Right.
And Lex has just revealed that he's got his mom and that he has to go kill Batman in order to save his mom. And the only thing he says to Lois when he leaves for Gotham to get Batman is, I have to convince him to help me or I have to kill him. Nobody stays good in this world. You would think at some point he could at least look at Lois and say, Lex has my mom. And just everything would become clear to her as to what he has to do.
Right.
Like, but if I was Superman, I would probably tell my girlfriend that Lex has my mom. You know, he doesn't have to say Martha Kent. You know, he can just say, you know, mom. She knows who it is. You know, it also doesn't fix the part at the end where Batman and Superman are fighting and, you know, you're letting him kill Martha. Why does Superman say Martha and not mom? I don't call my mom Joan.
Right.
Right? Like there's some stuff in there that makes absolutely no sense. It still doesn't. They didn't fix any of that. As you get closer to the end of the film, there's less stuff that smacks you as new and probably just more special effects scenes and more cuts and some more stuff.
Right.
The end fight feels a lot more cohesive. So again, they probably put in, you know, 10 seconds here, 15 seconds here, you know, a punch here, stuff that makes it easier to follow the thing visually. But it's such a huge fight with so many huge explosions that I think part of the problem is that movies are just getting too big. Like I could not follow that on a big screen.
No.
But watching it on home video, it was pretty cool.
My issue with it was there's the whole rundown where Superman has his showdown with Lex and Lex tells him he needs to go kill Batman. And then all of a sudden you see the bat signal and I'm like, wait, are they in Metropolis? And how is Metropolis that close to Gotham?
Well, in this telling, they put Gotham across the bay from Metropolis. Whereas Metropolis is this weird city where it's always like, just been the big capital city, not too far from Kansas.
Yeah.
But it's got water, like it's got a harbor. Yeah. So I'm not sure where it is.
And I know that Gotham is supposed to be like New Jersey. And New Jersey is like as far away from Kansas as you can get without being on the West Coast.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like it just, it doesn't make a whole, I mean, they did the geography for convenience for Bruce Wayne to be able to,
right,
you know, fly or to drive to the city.
Yeah,
to Metropolis and stuff like that. So I still really enjoy Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne Batman. They did a lot of things right. All the dream sequences still suck. All that kind of stuff is just useless. It doesn't need to be there. One thing that I can't believe I missed in the theatrical version, but was abundantly clear when I was watching it. Now, I watched with headphones because it's a super loud movie, and I was watching the first time I watched it almost all the way through, and it was late at night. The Batman suite, it's the music that they play at the very beginning when they're running the credits.
Yeah.
And they play it a little bit at the end, I think, too, is a haunting and beautiful piece of music. And I don't know how I missed that in the theaters.
It was the rest of the movie was so loud. It drowns it out.
Yeah, but it just, the Batman fight stuff is different. But this is the scene when Bruce's parents are getting killed, which maybe I was just not paying attention because, like, we've all seen that 100,000 times.
Yeah.
And I didn't need to necessarily see it again. But the music there is just really, really good. And it's helped set the tone a little bit better, I think, for me, having taken note of that.
Right.
I still really enjoy Cavill as Superman. Irons as Alfred is brilliant. There's some more clips there too, I think. There's some more quippy stuff between Alfred and Bruce Wayne. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that was really new. They made it pretty clear that Jimmy Olsen at the beginning is a CIA guy.
Yeah.
So was that, remind me, was that in the theatrical release?
Yes.
Okay. Because they catch him with a tracker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't remember that part, but there's an extended beginning to all of that where he introduces himself to Lois and actually says, I'm James Olsen, photographer, yeah, obviously. But he's just a little bit too cool. Now, does he, in the theatrical release, he dies.
Yes.
But does he say anything before he dies?
No, I think they just shoot him.
Yeah. So in this, he speaks in whatever local dialect they're in, and says, Lois had nothing to do with this. She has no idea who I am, blah, 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 blah. And essentially, like, it's not Jimmy Olsen. That's the name he used. But he's some CIA asset.
Using Jimmy Olsen as his cover identity.
They don't say that, but it becomes...
Implied.
It becomes so divergent from the Jimmy Olsen that we know in the comic, Superman's best friend, that you're just like, all right, well, they could still...
Introduce a
James Olsen, and I mean they probably won't, but they could if they wanted to, and I mean Lois might do a double take, but you know, but because they would have probably assumed, you know, found a photographer that actually works, you know,
They would have used a cover for a guy that's real.
Yeah, I mean, meanwhile the real James Olsen is like shooting for college newspapers or something like that back home, while they're using his name overseas as a cover for the CIA guy. Just because Lois is a smart reporter and you'd have to try and fool her and stuff like that. But yeah, so that scene was very different. And the whole thing just kind of, you realize just how much spin is on these things when you hear Zack Snyder saying, yeah, I thought it would be funny to, you know, put Snyder in the movie or put Jimmy Olsen in the movie and kill him in the first 5 minutes. Like, you know, that was never your plan. You're spinning that to make noise later. You know, yeah. You can tell from this cut that was not the intention, was to put him in on purpose and then have him shot. It was a nod. It was like, it's like that line when Perry White is yelling at Clark saying, it's not 1938, you know, which is of course, you know, the year that Superman was published. So stuff like that. I like those little nods. That stuff I appreciate, but the other stuff is not so good. It's still a cave troll at the end. It's Doomsday and all that kind of stuff. I feel like there's a little bit more with Luther. When they go back to catch Luther and put him in jail, he's in the tank. He's in the bio tank. And there's some weird horned devil manipulating stuff in front of him. And it's like he's communicating with someone or something. But it doesn't look like anything from DC that I've ever seen.
Really?
So, yeah. So, I mean, now that I've, I meant to look it up before the show, but to go online now, I've seen it and say, okay, what are all the differences between the theatrical? Because somebody somewhere has written down all the scenes. And just kind of go through and say what's new and see if anybody says, oh, that's, you know, this Diablo. It looks like Diablo, but it's not.
Right.
But it's that kind of a character. So yeah, I would recommend it. It's not going to change your opinion of Zack Snyder's treatment of Superman. Batman is still a kind of one-tracked minded murderer up until someone says his mother's name, and then everything kind of switches. Gal Gadot still steals the show. There's no extra bits for the metahumans. Like there's no Flash or Cyborg or stuff extras. It's all just right. Focused on them. There might be a little bit extra Wonder Woman stuff, but again, it's mostly that fight scene at the end, I think. Speaking of, I've seen some still images. They're not great production quality because they're photographs from being on set. And hopefully they won't do too much with filters, but the Wonder Woman costume from the standalone film is...
Looks bright.
Bright, yeah. It's blue and red and gold, and it looks really cool. And I hope they keep that kind of level of color. They don't have to go, like, rainbow with it, but I like what they did with the Captain America films, where he's right. Blue, and in Avengers, he's, like, pajama blue, and then they switched it pretty quick after that. They brought him back down. But in the first Captain America, the first Avenger, the blue and stuff like that in his jumpsuit it's gritty and more army-like. And I don't think they need to go that way with Wonder Woman, but they can certainly do her armor justice, I think, if they don't go overboard with the
right. And
the
they show photos of her they've been showing photos of her in like a cloak. So it would be easy for her to, if she has to walk in public, pull a hood over her head and you don't see the costume, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So it would make sense for her to walk around in the costume and still not be seen.
Well, and not to mention that they do it all the time in Batman v Superman. She's in regular clothes. Yeah. She's in beautiful dresses almost every time you see her.
Right.
Up until the fight. But the she's obviously, you know, got resources to walk around in plain clothes, and I'm not sure. She had her armor with her in a bag, as far as I'm led to believe in Batman v Superman. So I don't think she necessarily has it on underneath all of her stuff.
Right.
But I think she has to kind of prep. But yeah, her involvement in the fight at the end of the Batman Superman was, again, really cool. That hasn't changed. If anything, I think it might have been better, clearer. I wish the movie had a lot more of the three of them. Like, Batman fighting Superman should have been Act 2.
It should have, yeah. I felt like by the end of the first act, that should have been the start of Act 2.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they should have gone square at each other. But there's so much just build up to, like, I can appreciate them addressing, like, the philosophy of Superman and what they're trying to do, but it does not make for an exciting movie.
No.
You know, like it's the kind of thing that you want to explore in a television series.
It feels almost like there was too much backlash from Man of Steel and they felt they had to address it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
I think if they had just ignored it and just continued to tell a story, that it would have changed the perspective. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the key moments in the film is when the guy in the wheelchair at the Senate hearing blows everything up.
Yeah.
And there's a couple parts, and you can correct me if you don't remember this. One, after the fact, Lois discovers that he had just gone to get groceries and didn't know he was going to die.
That, so, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. So it's cool because there's a lot more Lois being a smart reporter in this than just some eye candy in a bathtub. Like there's a lot more strength to her character. And then she also discovers through the forensics lab that so they know that Lex Luthor made the chair and Lois knows he blew up the building, but then the sort of forensics person says, I don't know why he went through all that trouble just to reduce the blast radius. And Lois is like, what? It's like, yeah, the chair inside of the chair was lined with lead. And Lois, of course, clues in and realizes that because Clark had confessed to her, like, I didn't see it because I wasn't looking.
And it's because it was lined in lead.
It's because you couldn't see it. But, and she has a couple of opportunities in the movie to tell him, by the way, you know this guilt that you're feeling for not seeing that bomb? You couldn't see it. And she never says it. She never tells him. He's got the weight of the world literally on his shoulders. And she just, I guess, forgot to mention it. Like, just, there's all these things that are set up very well, even in the extended footage, that they just don't execute on later. And it's the kind of thing that you're led to believe the character, it would be on the tip of her tongue the next time she saw Clark.
To be like, hey.
Yeah.
No,
they have these awkward conversations about, like, you came back, and then he doesn't say anything. It's like, well, yeah, I'm saving you from falling off a building. I'm back. Like, just, you know, it's like, you know, you, like, I really prefer the Lois Lane in the animated series.
Yeah.
The way that they wrote her. She's just talk, 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 talk. She fires, as soon as she can get a hold of you, she's talking your ear off. And it's a much better way to deliver all the information to Superman that he needs, you know,
right.
So then he has to process it, you know, kiss her on the forehead and it's like, all right, I'll be right back. And then, you know, off he goes. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with this stuff. I'm definitely going to watch the Wonder Woman movie. I think that's going to be cool. I like Chris Klein too.
Yeah.
But I don't know about a Justice League film. Like, when is it coming out? Do we know?
I know that it was supposed to start filming this summer. And the last I had heard was it was not filming because they were rewriting the script.
Hmm.
That they had to push it back 3 months or something like that because of all the complaints about this one, they had to go back and rewrite portions of the script.
Hmm.
So I'm guessing it's supposed to be 2018, I think.
Well, I mean, if it means a better movie, then I'm all for it because, man, they... rewriting and changing things or even just the editing on this helped it. So hopefully
I'm still waiting for Suicide Squad.
Hmm, that's a good call.
There's a new trailer out for it that came out this week, and it still looks good.
Yeah.
And there's been some plot leaks about what the actual plot is, and it sounds like it's going to be really interesting.
Hmm, interesting.
It's got something to do with the Enchantress trying to resurrect a dark god or something and sacrificing the city to it, and that's why the Suicide Squad is sent in, because they're expendable or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's always, like, the thing with the Suicide Squad, is they're expendable.
Yeah, but that's kind of the idea behind it, and I was like, that could be interesting if she's trying to someone's trying to resurrect some ancient god or something. That could be really interesting.
Yeah, cool. Sam in the chat room is mentioning that she still loves Henry Cavill, and with the right script, he could be amazing. I agree. Yeah. No, I even throughout the eye-rolling scenes in this film, I really enjoy watching him on screen. And same with Affleck in the right scenes. My only pullback, I think, from Superman, having seen this a few times now, they definitely wrote him angry when he gets into fights and stuff. And I don't...
Which is weird, because even in the comic, you never see that. You rarely see that.
Or, I mean, he gets angry, but he gets angry at Luthor and Zod. And, like, he gets angry at the people that can take it. You know, whereas I don't necessarily want my new Superman to be goofy. Like, you don't need to hit him on the head with a tire iron and have him ask you if you've got bad vibrations. Like, that's not where I want to go. But I really enjoy just the whole... You know, people wind up and they punch him, and he kind of looks at them like, huh, did you really think that was going to work? Like, just, there's a ham to Superman that I really like, and they haven't gotten there yet, but yeah, he's a little bit angry. We'll move on. I can hum and haw about it the same way that I'm undecided about it, but yeah, it's worth checking out, and at least it's a better technical movie than previous. But, well, I think that's about all the time we have, so let's roll into the Internet Minute. And this is brought to you by Patreon. So if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and you can dive in there and see if you'd like to help us out. It's a great way to support the podcast, just with direct patronage. We can use the money to pay for web hosting. We can buy new software when it comes out when we need it. All that kind of stuff. Also, we're getting up into the couple hundred files now, so having those online and bandwidth and all that kind of stuff does eventually cost money. Anything at all is totally up to you, and by doing so, you can partake in the Slack chat, which is a patron-only thing. You can get to hang out with Sam and Phil and a bunch of other folks that are always in there. It's a good place, and I believe that the Slack is where I first saw your pick, Lou.
Yes, it is. And I found it last week, 5 minutes after we hung up from the call last week. So I was glad I got to mention it this week. And that is HBO put up a video, and it's Game of Thrones explained by Samuel Jackson. And it is hilarious.
Yeah. I watched it when it came out, too. It's so good. Like, I'm surprised he doesn't drop the F-bomb more often.
Yes. It feels almost like they intentionally tried to keep him from doing that. Like they had to probably make him go back and redo a dialogue. No, yeah. We need to tone down the language. Yeah. No, you need to tone down the language.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like really, like they get to Ramsay, and this isn't a spoiler, but they get to Ramsay, and he's complaining that this is now Sansa's new boyfriend, you know, and he calls him an asshole. And I'm like, that seemed held back. Like,
yes.
That seemed like, I feel like Sam Jackson could probably do a lot worse.
the best part is this, they show the scene where it's all the Starks lined up together and he goes, "Don't get attached."
Yeah. And there's a little bit of repetition too, where he says like, "I'm just saying," like I'm not sure whether they use that clip a couple times or what, but yeah. It's definitely worth watching. It's what, like 4 minutes? Something like that.
I think it's like seven, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He goes all the way up into the current season.
Yeah. So spoilers. Don't watch it if, even though they don't really give away stuff, they definitely talk about who dies. So if you haven't watched Game of Thrones, this is not the thing to watch. It's way, way more of a payoff if you've seen seven seasons or six seasons.
Yes.
Excuse me. Seven. Getting ahead of myself.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. If you'd like to leave us an iTunes review, this would be a great spot to have your review read right here on the air. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. And as always, as I have been mentioning for the last few weeks, check out forgepublishing.com and my Kickstarter book project with Piper Thibodeau. Lou, where can people find you online?
The easiest place to find me is at BusyZombieLord on Twitter. And you can also check out my show, Zombies Ate My Podcast, wherever you find your podcasts. We're on everything.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.